Well, when you mentioned this, that sounds implausible because I've done a lot of free recall studies and people don't usually make mistakes. And the whole idea of free recall was people set a very high threshold and you don't put out a response unless you're highly confident. And sure enough, in most of the studies I did, errors were very, very few and far between. And so I thought it's very unlikely that an individual was saying this happens in free recall. I thought I have trouble believing that. So I looked it up over the summer, read the paper. Deese had dropped it like a hot potato. He didn't even cite it in his own book, usually. He wrote a book in 1965 on associations in human memory. Didn't cite that study. But anyway, so I last experiment I ever did by myself, I was teaching human memory in the fall to 36, 35 undergraduates. So by hand, I decided, I came up with. I went to the norms, got, Deese was very good about telling you what he did. So I got however many lists I got, I read them out to my class, I had them recall them one by one. I developed a recognition test, handwritten, gave them a recognition test after that, had list words, unrelated words, words like sleep from the implied by the list but not presumed. And then I knew it had worked when right after, when they'd just taken the recognition test right at the end of class, and I said, okay, I want to read you six words. Tell me if you, raise your hand if you recognize those as being on the list. So I read out the six words that were implied but not given, not presented, and almost everybody raised their hand. So I thought, yes, this has worked. I don't know if it's working recall. So for that experiment, I've still got the file right here. I scored all the data myself. But that was experiment one of Rotary McDermott. It was an in-class demonstration. And then at that point, Kathleen came in. She had told me when I first started talking about this, I'd be very interested in it. I said, well, I've got this new graduate student coming this year, and I really have this set aside for him. You're already doing fine on this other stuff. Then he dropped out after one semester and went to study philosophy. So I said, hey, you're so interested in that project, so let's get serious and do a real experiment too. It's not just a demonstration. And so she did experiment too. I thought I probably had a hit, and she was too young to know. And so the people were coming through, and I was showing them the data. Dan Schachter came, for example, to visit Rice. I showed him the data, and he couldn't believe it. So he asked for all my materials and stuff. So he went home and started doing experiments. David Payne, my former student with hypermnesia, somehow talked to him, and he wanted the materials. Anyway, we kind of had to rush to be the first to publish on it. Well, first, I had trouble believing. Does this really happen? That's why I did the demonstration experiment. And I would often do it. I like to do in-class experiments that have never been done before. Sometimes they bomb, sometimes they don't. But that one worked spectacularly. So it was more, first, can I get the effect? And then, can we do it in a really correct experiment? And then we had to kind of make up a story to put in our journal discussion. So the easiest was associative activation and then a kind of monitoring where these items fail monitoring. They're so powerful. People are still debating this. One idea is that they are consciously activated while you hear the list, because the list that really worked, the items are strongly associated. Sleep happens to be one of the best lists. When McDermott and I made up our big set of 24 lists, we had no idea which ones were good, which ones were bad.